Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Chain Gang podcast. It's Easter Sunday celebration, but today I'm joined by British Cycling Academy rider, track sprinter, Tom Sharples. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm surviving. I've already eaten chocolate this morning because, you know, athlete life.
Already?
Yeah, no, it was the first thing I did when I got up, to be fair. I was like, I can't wait for this. It was a cream egg, to be fair. I think that's bearable. It's not that bad.
That's not too bad.
No.
I put some Easter egg in my porridge this morning, so I think that counts.
Yeah, I mean, that's going out there. Easter egg in porridge, that's not something I've ever done. To be honest, I'll give you that.
Yeah. You know, have to mix it up in the current weird times.
Yeah. You know, God knows what'll be in there next.
I don't know, like, I've tried Nutella, peanut butter, stuff like that, but peanut butter's probably the best one so far.
Oh, it's a bit thick.
Yeah, but it's all protein, though.
Yeah, true. yeah, no, so, there's a few things we could talk about. Obviously, you're not racing, that's nice.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like everything's gone out the window for this year now. It's a bit shit, to be honest with you. Like, when all this first coronavirus stuff came out, I was a bit down about it all because I'm like, oh, I'm training for nothing now. So it was a bit of a blow because I had hoped to go to like Euros and Worlds this year. And they're in Egypt and Portugal, which both pretty cool countries. So it's a bit of a bummer. But you know, just have to find some more goals. I was supposed to be going to Germany in 4 weeks for a track international, but that's out the window too now. So it's a bit demoralizing, but I think it's important to, like, at the current time, rather than focus on the big goals of the year, like times and big events, to sort of find like smaller goals. So, like, I don't know, like for me, probably like trying to improve my starts, because that's like the whole basis of Junior Academy, basically. Like, if you can bang a good start, it means you can get on well for the team sprint. So just try and improve that, try and become more flexible, because that makes you go faster as well. And I got a lot of time on my hands as well, so I have more time for things I wouldn't be able to do before, which is quite nice. So even though the situation's a bit crap, trying to make the best out of it.
Yeah, and obviously one thing that does come under strain in situations like this, and it's particularly relevant to most of society now, it's like, how are you as a rider trying to keep yourself mentally healthy, and how do you do it generally as part of the whole when you're riding normally?
I don't know. It's difficult because I haven't been, like, because I'm a first year junior, I haven't been affected by it too much, like as much as other people could have been, because I have friends who are second years. And this year was like their like big year potentially to like win Worlds and Euros and that. So I think it puts a lot more strain on the second years and also for senior as well, because senior academy selections this year, if you're a second year. So it's difficult to be selected now because there's no like events to kind of show yourself like when you're on your best form. But I think the mentally healthy bit, I think the lack of routine can throw people off quite a lot at the moment, because as like for me, I'd normally be at school at the moment, but obviously it's Easter holidays, but if it wasn't, I'd be at school, so I have that bit of routine, and now that's been taken away, I think that can throw people off. So I think a good way to do it is like plan your days out in a way. It doesn't have to be like every hour you're doing something, but like just like plan the night before, like wake up, you're gonna have your breakfast, you're gonna do some stretching, you're gonna go out training, and then you do some schoolwork or something. And I think implementing that routine really, like, it gives you some sort of structure to the day and stops you from, like, I don't know, overthinking or worrying about everything or just, like, being in your own head too much, which sometimes can be not necessarily dangerous, but, like, detrimental to your mental health.
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, you said about losing like all your aims effectively for this year. Yeah. And obviously the big one for a lot of riders, I talked to this with Alex as always, those riders aiming to peak at the Olympics, they've worked for 2 years probably just to be ready to peak perfectly at the absolute best they can be.
Yeah.
And they've now had that postponed by a year. I think athletes everywhere, the hardest battle they're going to face, not only keeping their fitness, is keeping any motivation or desire or keeping their mental health like healthy. So
yeah,
I think
it's a
tough challenge.
Yeah, like especially I think as you get older, it's harder to peak. So for a guy like maybe like Jason Kenny, who's like still a phenomenal rider, but he is getting older. So I think that could be quite hard on him. But maybe for some of the younger riders, it wouldn't be as bad. But yeah, I think if I was going to the Olympics, I'd be pretty like pissed off it's been postponed by a year. Because the training plans are like so specific and rigorous nowadays that changing it by a year is massive. But then I also think it's an opportunity for other countries to like pull it back in a way. Because, for example, we didn't do great in team pursuit at Worlds. So I think with all, like, this could be a time to like fix up in a way, because Denmark and that are just razzing it. It's actually crazy. Like it was so fast.
Me and Alex discussed this as well, and basically like the thing is it's almost exactly what you expect from a team that's working with Dan Bigham, which going to come out and they're going to suddenly be absolutely rapid because they've done so much work on their aero.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, which actually, obviously, you being a sprinter, is more marginal. It kind of really brings into the fore the whole idea of marginal gains, except Denmark did it on a fairly major scale.
Yeah.
Just from changing their aero.
Aero, chains, helmets, and like, what bike are an incredibly strong team, but they're not as strong as like the Danes and that. So if you implement their aero and all of them like magic onto like a world class team, like it doesn't even surprise me that they're doing the splits that they're doing. And it was quite funny because I've got a mate called Matty Eggleston, and he's man two, and he went to Worlds for team sprint, and he did a 13.4 for his lap as a junior. And then to think that like Denmark are doing 13.3s every lap for a team pursuit, it's just crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, how drastically they obliterate the world record was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, like, the other thing with it is, I know, obviously, you can't comment that much on things like this because you've got kind of contractual obligations, but it's almost exactly how British cycling have always won at the Olympics, is they come in with a load of new technology, a load of new skin suits, a load of new aero before the Olympics. That gives them the edge. And whether or not they would have been able to catch Denmark this year, I don't really know, because Denmark were heads and shoulders above everyone else.
Yeah,
but
it was. I'm not sure, but I think, I don't know, because like the new bike is outrageous. Like the gains on that is crazy, and then they'll have new helmets, they'll have new skin suits. So I think they could pull it back, but it's a big pullback to make. So I'm not sure, but I think that they've got a year to rethink things now, so that could help, but I don't know if it'll be enough to pull it back to Denmark's times.
Well, yeah, and obviously you're a sprinter, so you won't have to do that. But in terms of sprint, I mean, the guy you set that flying 200 world record, a 9.1, 9.2, something like that, is insane.
9.1, yeah, that's so fast.
I don't think that guy's ever podiumed at Worlds or anything like that.
It is interesting, isn't it?
And, like, well, I don't know how much you listen to Alex, but Alex put a bet on with people at the Velodrome that after the Olympics, there'll be a post, a sub-9 200 metre.
Yeah, like, definitely. 100%. Because we're being trained up for 2028 Olympics. And if you think about the times people are doing now, like 9.2, and 2028 is like, what, 8 years away? So if you can, like, if people are doing 9.2s now, people are going to be easily doing sub-9s by my Olympics, or my potential Olympics.
It's confidence. Yeah, no, right. I mean, it's mental. And, like, to be honest, this is what I said to Alex as well, which I'd like to. I obviously you ride for BC, so it'd be interesting to get your opinion. The with them being able to lap almost as quick as actual team sprint laps on pursuit bars, is there actually like potential for people to be riding flying 200s on TT bars? Because if it's making that much of a difference to them, obviously I don't know because I don't ride. I don't know anything about science. I don't even know if you're allowed to do it. I don't know the rules. But because of the kilo, you can ride with pursuit bars or without.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are going to try it in the 200 metres.
I think, I personally don't think it would be as quick. Because for a 200, it's a lot more about, like, you're going so quick. Like, much, much faster than than team pursuit. And also, the control that you need to hold the black and that. Is so much more when you're going like 70-75 k an hour, and like my old coach for apprentice called Andy Leverton, he was telling me that if you go up two boards above the black, it's like 0.001 for a 200, and as you get faster, that becomes even more like significant. So the better that you can hold the black at that speed, the faster you'll go. But so on TT bars, I don't think you'd be able to, like, I don't know, hold the black as well. And also, if you think about it, you'll be going out of the saddle, down the banking, and then you have to change into the TT bars, like mid banking. So that could also like fuck up your speed.
Do you ride your kilo on pursuit bars, or do you not?
Yeah, 100%. It's so much faster.
At nationals, when I said this year, I was confused that some people weren't. But that's not my decision to judge. But but in this, because one thing people don't know about sprint is quite how much of it is kind of based on positioning and momentum through corners and the sweet spot coming out of turn four and turn two.
Definitely.
Like, well, when you ride a kilo, do you just stick to the black? Because obviously, pursuing, you sometimes see people swinging up into the corners and out of the corners,
yeah.
To get, or swinging out onto the straights to get that sweet spot. But I don't know how effective that is in a kilo if you lose too much time doing that.
I don't know. I think it's different in a kilo because you're literally going flat out the whole time. But the idea of it is, as you move up to the red, you'll have like a little bit more momentum as you go into the banking on black onto the black, because you're going a tiny bit downhill. And if you're thinking about that, if that saves like 0.01 per lap, you're doing 16 laps, that's quite a lot of tenths that you're saving. But I think in a kilo, you're going so hard that you kind of just want to focus on just getting all the energy out of you, rather than focusing on like being controlled, like moving up and moving back down. And also, like, you're going so ham that I think if you try to do that, you could like overshoot it. Then also, you wouldn't be thinking about going flat out. So, I personally wouldn't do it because I'd be too focused on going ham. But I think it could work, but I don't think it's worth it because it's such a short race. And like, you're looking at splits now, like guys like opening up with like 17 sevens or something like that. It's mad.
Yeah, but I was thinking actually, because obviously the only time I've actually seen you race, except for when I beat you in the time trial.
Yeah.
The fact you got lost is completely irrelevant. But was that track nats? And how do track nats compare as a first year junior to all the other events you race? Because surely it has the biggest crowds, and kind of the best atmosphere. You're racing against people who have been racing for a long time.
It was probably like one of the sickest events of my life, like, can't lie. Like, it was so cool. Like, the atmosphere was mega. But funnily enough, I was in Apeldoorn the week before, so I had international that week, and then I got back for like, well, we went to Apeldoorn, we travelled for 2 days, so like in the team bus, 2 days, stayed around Calais, and then drove the next day. Then had a track session, which is pretty cool. But like the track at Apeldoorn was so weird. Like, it was like the bankings were really strange. and like we were doing a team sprint effort, and I kept getting flicked. So like, and like, I kept getting pissed off because I kept like coming onto the blue, like the coat in the straights and shit like that. And then also like the transitions were like really shallow. So it was a bit weird. So it was a different sort of track. But yeah, that was a really good event. And then got back from there, had 2 days at home, and then drove straight back up to Nationals. And it was quite cool actually, because it was like no pressure in a way, because like I knew that I wasn't going to win, because obviously you have all the podium riders there, and you have the guys like Spratty and Hamish Turnbull and Ali Fielding, like all the big names. So I doubted that I was going to win. So I took it more of as a learning curve in a way. So I focused on like the more like the technical aspects rather than like worrying about times and that. So it was really good. And when I won my Kieran heat, like the crowds are going wild, and I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. But like I wasn't really like a big name, so even though like it was quite nice in a way, like I wasn't one of the big names there, but everyone was still cheering for us. So that was quite cool.
Yeah, no, I managed to get my helper pass. So there we are. I was in the middle. but no, yeah, I mean, it must be nice for like first year juniors to get actually to race environments like that, because obviously no matter where you race, even if you're at Europeans or Worlds, the stands are never going to be full for junior events. Yeah. That's just, well, you look at any sport, that's how it works. You never see an under 23 football game sell out Wembley. Like, it would never happen. No. So no. It's just how it works. So it's nice that you get to compete on the same stage and people turn up, and people do turn up in masses for that. I mean, I wasn't there for your heat. I think, I don't know if I missed my train or if I was trying to get in the track centre, but I wasn't there. But no, it is good. And I never realised how loud it was in the track centre events like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't have a conversation. Yeah, I remember saying to Matt Gibson and Charlotte when I was sitting there, I can't imagine what it's like at 6 day when they've got tunes pumping like twice as loud. But yeah, no.
Actually, speaking of that, at Appledorn, there was like our like tent was like our like pen was like here, and there was like a massive sound system next to us. So like I'm trying to warm up and I just can't hear anything. And then there was this like there was quite a good commentator, but he was Dutch, and his English sounded like loads of other languages combined. So it was like this average music. And this Dutch commentator, all in one next to our pen, yeah, it was proper loud.
Have you got a favourite track you raced on? I mean, I was about to say your home track's probably what the London one, but you can't forget Welling Streets. Streets don't forget about Welling.
Welling's all right.
The massive I don't know. Tailwind and headwind down the street.
To be fair, it is pretty good for training because extra gains there. But I don't know. Favorite track? I like Manchester because it's fast. I like Lee Valley quite a lot because done a lot of training there. But I don't know.
That's
I think
got the steepest bank in the UK, isn't it? The Lee Valley one.
Nah, I think Scotland is. It's Scotland's like 49%, something like that.
I thought it was 51 degrees at London. The cafe on the corner is named after it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Oh, the shit. Cafe on the banking is named after the...
Oh, mad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think probably my favourite track's like, even though it's a crap track, it's probably like Newport, because it's quite special. Because I got the national record there. So that made it pretty special. But it's a weird track though, because it's like when I first rode it, like first year under 16, I was doing my 200 like warm up, and like it was like dusty and creaking, and like I was shitting myself because like I'm going around, and I'm like, fuck, why is the track creaking? But yeah, like then the next year to come away with like That record was mega. And I was speaking to the podium coach, and he was like, "Yeah, your cadence was like 161 average, which is quite sick."
When are you gonna match up to that video of Francois Pervy?
What's that?
There's a video of him doing 400 RPM on a rollers.
400 RPM.
Yeah, he's mental. It's actually Jeez. Mental.
Yeah. In training, I've done 274 or something like that, which is all right.
It's up your game. Up your
it's
game.
Up my game. Well, I mean, I haven't got like many Olympic medals yet, so I think I need to get a couple of those, and then I'll be able to like contest Francois.
Would you go and do the Kirin Academy in Japan? Is that something you would do?
Sure. That'd be so sick.
That hill thing scares me. That hill. You know, the hill they have to do.
Yeah. It looks so fun.
I mean, the racing looks intense. Have you ever watched any of the documentaries about it?
I've watched a lot of the racing on, like, Joe Truman's Instagram and that, but I haven't watched the documentary.
Oh, you get put in isolation before the race as a rider, so you can't... They can't, like, be paid to win or paid to lose.
Mental. Oh, really?
Yeah, because they take it really seriously. It's like horse racing. They don't want anyone, like, fixing it. So you have to be in isolation with no phone and stuff for, like, a day before the race or something. It's mental.
Really? Bloody hell.
Yeah, no, it's quite intense. But it does look like a lot of fun. And all the riders who seem to go there and come back better. So
yeah. Like, Joe Truman's, like, an absolute machine. Because I was in the final at Nationals with him for the Kirin. And this guy called Matt Roper went off with like a lap and a bit to go or something like that. Or like two laps to go.
Sounds like some James Bunting moves.
trust me. But I think the gap was like 10 seconds or like, nah, wasn't that. It was like a sec, I don't even know. But the gap was huge. And like Joe Truman just like storms around the track and like rolls him on the line. That was actually mental. And like, I was riding behind him in the final, and like just the way he rides is just like sick. Like the way he like gets out of the saddle, like it's just so smooth. So like, yeah, he's a pretty cool rider. But yeah, I definitely would like to go do the Kirin school, because I heard that you get to like you have to build your own bike as well, like before you can race it. So I think that's quite cool too.
Yeah, I mean. I guess everything comes with its positives, and obviously going and racing over there where it is like their sport. But the one thing that always confused me about it is you never tend to see Japanese riders excelling at on the world stage in Kirin. They might reach the final of Worlds, they might reach the final Olympics, but you never seem to see them winning it, which is bizarre. But I don't know what it is, if it's just like the quality of the racing over there is better, but not as quick.
It's also a different sort of Kirin that Kirin racing, because there isn't a Danny, I don't think.
I don't know how it works. Don't know that much.
But I'm pretty sure there isn't a Danny or something like that, because they start on this weird start gate, and then they all go, and then, yeah. So I think it's a different sort of racing.
Oh, that's what explains it. Well, here's a question for you. I don't even know how many of them you used. Traditional Danny. Like the hybrid Derny or the proper electric Derny, which is best?
Well, obviously we have like the old school Dernies at Welling, and we do the Kirins there and that. But they're pretty cool. But it's kind of annoying because you get like smoke in your face and that, because they're like it's like gaseous fumes. So it's kind of hard if you're doing like a kilo behind the Derny. You can't really breathe that much. And then we use electric ones at Lee Valley and Manchester, and they're a lot more quiet and like they're proper quick as well. And they have like little guards on the back of the wheel, so like there's always a game like who can touch the wheel the most, just like see how close you can get. But I was I don't know, but the thing about Dernies is when you go too fast they start to slip. Like I was doing an effort. It was like a rolling 500 at Lee Valley once, and we hit like 81 k an hour, and I think at like 83, like the dernier starts to slip, like when it's riding. So it's a bit sketch, but then I'm thinking, if I'm going like 81 k an hour, how quick are the podium guys going, and how does that dernier stay on the track and that?
Yeah, I mean, I reckon I'll be quite good as a dernier rider. You know, I reckon that suits me. A little bit of assistance. I can't do that speed on my own. Although, right, when this is all over, 1v1 sprint with me at Welling, best of three. You watch. I'll completely whack you, mate.
Straight up. I can't.
It's my end. I don't even have a track bike, mate. So we'll see. No, but, yeah, because... I mean, riding behind a dernier, the old ones, does not sound particularly fun, I'll be honest. But then, as an atmosphere thing, which isn't really what it should be, there are more important issues in the atmosphere. But when I went to the first ever Track World Cup where they had electric dernies.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, so like, because obviously you know the Kieran's going because you hear that kind of roar of the little two-stroke engine going mental.
Yeah.
And you just don't get it. And then you have the starting pistol, which is like 10 times too loud. Because you're not expecting it at all. But yeah, I mean, I guess we have to move forward. We have to be more environmentally friendly.
Yeah, definitely. But like, I don't know, I think it does take away from like the traditionality. Is that a word? I don't know,
something like that. It's close enough.
Yeah, like it does take away from it a bit. And but like most of the time, like if you have like a decent holder, he'll be like, oh, Donnie's coming, turn four, he's coming now, and then they'll give you a decent push. But like, yeah, like I know what you mean. Like the electric dernier, it's not as loud and it's like not as traditional. But I think they should bring them back for 6 days, because 6 days are like loud enough anyway. So yeah. I think it'd be kind of cool, like if they had like derniers and shit.
Yeah, I mean the dernier racing at six is exciting. I rate that.
Yeah.
I mean, I said to Alex that the racing I find most entertaining is stayer racing. Stayer racing.
Yeah, it's
hilarious.
It's so cool.
You're not endurance, though, so you're banned, mate. No stayer racing for you. I'll get on it.
Yeah. Those bikes are like a sick, though. They're so cool.
What, a little tiny front wheel?
Yeah.
That's what I said to Alex, was that he looked absolutely hilarious because of the size of his shoulders and how massive he is. He looks so funny in one of those. But no, it's not really ridden in the UK. They do it in Germany a lot.
Yeah.
But they ride.
They did it on hill for a bit.
Yeah. Well, it's the existence of the blue line is because of stayer racing. I didn't know that until recently. Oh. Yeah, because that's the quickest line for the stayer bikes to take.
Oh, sick.
Because I've always thought the blue line was just a weird line that didn't really have much purpose, but it's for stayer racing originally.
For me, it's always just been like the warm-up line. Speaking of like Alex Spratt and like how big he is, what do you think about like the diversity and body types of sprinters nowadays?
Oh, bloody hell, interviewing the interviewer. This is intense. No, I mean... I obviously haven't raced sprint, so I can't say, oh, well, this is how you should do it. But to be honest, it's always been traditionally you need to be strong because it's so pushy. And there's a lot more physical contact in sprint than any other discipline in cycling. Mm. And I mean, I don't really know because I've not ridden it. But I mean, it's nice to see diversity. And like, you see people breaking the mold in cycling quite a lot, particularly on the road. You see the like little tiny sprinters are now coming to the fore.
Yeah.
Little people like Caleb Ewan are just proving if you're quick enough, you can still win. So, I mean, hopefully it gets diverse. You're not exactly the biggest lad in the world. So.
Yeah. I was going to say actually, because like I've always been pretty skinny, but like I'm starting to get big now, but like, well, bigger. Not
extra clout. Extra clout.
But It's interesting to see how like sprinters kind of change. Like there are a lot like big tall guys now, and like not necessarily like massive legs like Robert Forsterman, but like I don't know, like I've got a mate called Matty, I mentioned him earlier, but he's like huge, like his arms are like twice the size of mine, and like he's like the traditional sort of sprinter, like big bulky guy, rides big gears, but like also like people are using smaller gears nowadays. That's not true. People used to use smaller gears, but now it's like massive gears are faster. But I went 10.8. Yeah, like, but Final 16, like, I went 10.8 on 88. And, like, some people struggle to go 10.8 on, like, what's the word? Like, bigger gears. So I think it doesn't matter, but if you want to get, like, the sub-10s, sub-9s, it's going to have to be a massive gear.
Well, that's the thing. And when we were at TrackNats, obviously I was with Matt Gibson and Charlotte Brawl for the whole time, and talking to Matt, he didn't qualify for the points race final because he went out. He hasn't ridden track because he's obviously a Pro Conti rider now. So he doesn't ride track properly anymore. He's ex-GB. He's won a European title in the Team Pursuit Seniors and stuff. Like,
solid.
But he basically turned up on what used to be a big gear. It was like a 90-something for endurance. And he said he couldn't keep up. Like, because everyone is riding such massive gears now that it's almost impossible to ride with that, which is quite impressive considering I think he won his European title in 2015-14.
Yeah.
It's pretty mental. Like,
I heard that, like, Ethan Hayter rides like 110 or like something suited like that for like the endurance races. It's because he's so strong, he can just push that gear.
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't know what I'd have to ride. Like 20 or something just to get the gears going. I don't know, it's weird because obviously it used to always be a big deal when I've been at Track World Cups and stuff, when the sprinters bring out these huge gears for 200s, because for a 200 it does just need to be as quick as you can go in it, but like obviously once you're actually sprinting against someone, you don't want to be able to not accelerate. Because that's one of the key components definitely. Of sprinting, which is what Alex was saying the other day about when he was racing James Bunting. He had to have 10 minutes worth of discussion about if he was going to need a gear he could accelerate with quickly or if he was going to need to be able to ride after him or whatever. But yeah, no, because if James Bunting ever listens to this, he's going to think I'm obsessed with him. But what is your opinion on the tactic James Bunting always uses in the sprint? To just attack?
He doesn't always use it, but Spratty's like, because Spratty came into the sport late, he doesn't have like the bike handling skills that people like me and James have, because we've been riding since we're like 10, 9, like from up to young. So I think that helps with starting too, because you have a lot more control on the bike. And also, James knows that Spratty rides on massive gear. So like, I think his idea was just go ham and try and hold it, but I think it does work because Alex uses such big gears, but I don't think it'll work all the time.
Well, then, he got knocked out by him. This year.
I heard that when Alex rode past James, he called him a prickle sign, which is quite funny.
That doesn't sound a lot like Alex, to be fair. Well, I mean, he just gave up on the second heat this time, so it's not worth chasing him. Because if you lose it, you're then
fucked for the next one.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting tactic, and he used it 6 days against him as well when I was there. So it's nice to see. When are you getting on the 6 days books?
Well, the plan was this year to hopefully do pretty well at Euros and Worlds and then get asked to do it, but obviously there's no Euros and Worlds now, so can't really do that. But
they usually take they normally have the two Germans because they ride like everything at 6 days.
Then
they'll take one like Alex, just a sprinter who's good nationally at elite level but not in the GB team. And they seem to take academy riders for the rest. So you're pretty much in prime spot.
Potentially. I guess we'll see. I think it could be enjoyable and I can make a lot of money off it.
It's like a big party, to be honest. It's the only race I've seen where you see riders having a beer in the track centre afterwards, so that's nice.
Well, actually, since this whole coronavirus stuff's like kicked off, I think like I've let my diet slip a little bit, and like I'm not drinking like all the time, but like I'll like have a beer with like my dad and that, and I think like it's kind of good because like it lets me like relax a bit more than I would be able to normally. Because obviously, if this whole coronavirus stuff wasn't going on, I'd be going to Germany in 4 weeks, so I wouldn't be drinking because I'm like mid training block and I'm mid like race season in a way. So I think this is it's quite good because it can like let me like put my hair down in a way. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Obviously, I have a rugby background. I played rugby for 10 years.
Yeah.
I've refereed it the 3 years since I stopped playing. One thing about rugby at any level is it's always been like you have rugby and then you have the party atmosphere around it. And I feel like one thing cycling is missing is it's not really got the social aspects that a lot of other sports have. Like I know people socialise at events in the track centre, etc., but there's none of like what you see in rugby or even football or anything like that, where it's just like a lot of going out when you can appropriately. So I like the fact 6 days brings that in as kind of like part of the atmosphere. But yeah, if Team GB need a new social sec, give me a ring. I'll sort it out. I already announced myself as the AWOL social sec the other day. I just declared myself social sec.
I think it's difficult because, like, I don't know, because I think cycling's like a very serious sport, but not to say that, like, rugby and other sports aren't as serious, but I think, like, it's kind of frowned upon drinking in cycling because, like, it makes you go slow. Because, like, in my experience, like, if I drink, then the next day my legs just feel shit. So I'm not sure. But like,
oh, I'd go quicker on a beer. Genuinely. When I use Strava, if I've been to the pub in halfway through my ride and I ride back, I set PRs all the way back, and I've no idea how that works.
Who knows? But yeah.
Right. Anyway, I'm looking at the time. I think we can finish it there. Thanks for being on here, Tom.
No worries.
You've gone a bit re-spritting with your hair. We'll ignore that.
My hair looks awful, but like, I'm kind of rolling with it. Like, yeah. I'm enjoying it.
That's a way to get anyone who doesn't already follow you on Instagram to go look at your Instagram. See, there you go. Go look at Tom's new hair. But actually, all the clout you have is going to be getting me views on this podcast. So let's get it. I'm expecting new fans.
New fans. It's quite interesting though. Like, the whole Instagram stuff, like, it does do, like, a lot for me, in a way, because this week I got, like, 4 emails from companies, like, messaging me about, like, hello, we found your Instagram, we think you're doing really well, would you like to collaborate with us? So, like, if you have a strong Instagram game, it can properly, like, do you some, like, good, like, bits, in a way, because, like, I know Lacole, my friend Lawrence Carpenter works with Lacole, and he was telling me, like, he gets, like, about, like, 30 emails a day saying, oh, hello, can you guys sponsor me? And then you can only really be considered if you have, like, 10K on Instagram. So the better your Instagram is, like, the more potential you have for sponsorships.
So you're grafting away. Getting there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But, I use social media more for just like for the grafting sense to get sponsors, but like kind of just to show people like what it's all about. Because I make films and that for like races and stuff. Like I made one for Nationals in Apeldoorn, and like it kind of like shows people like what racing's like for like as a like on the youth scene. Because the youth scene and the junior scene isn't like televised or publicized as much as the elites and seniors are. So I think it's good to show people what it's all about and like. It was quite cool because when I posted the Nationals film, like literally like I flipped through everyone's stories, and like every single person's story like had it on their story, so I think it was quite cool like the amount of support I got for that film. And it
well,
got like
it's a big app that this podcast should be everyone's story as well. I'll be disappointed if it's not.
Oh, of course, man, of course. don't worry about that.
The views plug right here. I'm disappointed I didn't make a feature in the Cracknats film. Just saying.
Yeah, but like, I only saw you like on the stairs when I was leaving.
I didn't even think you knew who I was, so.
Yeah, no, because I remember meeting you like ages ago, and you had some like funky bars, and then you telling me that like that the comms hate those bars for some reason.
Oh yeah, you're not allowed to race them. Yeah, because they had they have a dip after. They're actually my brother's bars. So,
oh, yeah.
But yeah, they dip just off the stem again, so you're more aero no matter how you're riding, because like if you're on the tops you're still aero. But yeah, they apparently, the commissaire said you would be disqualified normally.
It's so, a bit weird.
Yeah,
to be fair, after you.
Oh, as you can say, they my brother had the first ones in the UK because they were in your prototype when he bought them.
Oh, really?
The company. Yeah, so they're not. They, that's why the commissaires had no idea. So no, illegal.
That's pretty cool. I put some 33 centimeter bars on my road bike, so that it feels like the same on my track bike. But like I pointed the tops in, and they're like 26 centimeters on the top, so it's a bit naughty. But it feels quite nice actually, and it's dead aero. So
yeah, I mean the only thing that I've done with my bars. I got a Bianchi recently, and I didn't screw the handlebars in properly. But they were like fine for my whole ride, and I came off this massive descent which ends in a T junction on a main road.
Oh, yeah.
And as I was braking, the bars just rotated around, and they ended up with my brake levers facing the floor. And I was like, fortunately, Jesus. I brought like Allen keys with me, so I could fix that before I had to ride home. Yeah. Massive knobhead, but yeah, that's the level of cycling I'm at. except from beating time.
I get out. Nah, I kind of miss endurance actually, because sprint's actually quite lonely. Like, all my sprint mates are up north, like Manchester and like Peterborough. So it's quite a lonely life, because like I don't go out and do like 4 hours, 5 hours with my mates. So it is lonely, but like I think that's just a part of it really. It's just different.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you still get to socialise. That's why I need a social sex, Tom. I'm telling you, my best.
Alright.
There we are. So thanks for listening. Again, I have no idea who I'll be back with next week, because I don't do any planning. So thanks for listening. And we'll see you then.
I'd like to thank my sponsors, Rainer Essex, GLL Sports Foundation, Sports Aid, Precision Hydration, Kinetic Cycles, FNX Fitness. Thank you for the support.